Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Clay Johnson, CEO of CacheQ. Clay has decades of executive experience in computing, FPGAs, and development flows, including serving as vice president of the Xilinx Spartan business unit, which was acquired by AMD. Welcome to the podcast, Clay.
Hi, Dan. It's nice to be here. Good morning.
So, Clay, first, I'd like to ask how you got involved in semiconductors. Do you have an interesting story to share?
Well, that's actually some time ago now, but I grew up in the Bay Area, and I was interested in technology, and that was the early days of technology starting to happen in the Bay Area. And I was looking to go off to college, and ends up I had a girlfriend and her father worked for Amdahl. And so I got exposed to computing and semiconductors through that. And then I went off to Berkeley. And then when I got out of Berkeley, I started working in, I got a summer job at Intel, and then I graduated and I started working for AMD. So that's kind of my path into the semiconductor industry.
Yeah, great story. Yeah, I know Amdahl, of course. That was a great company.
Yes, it was.
So what brought you to CacheQ?
Well, so as you said, a number of years ago, I worked for Xilinx. And when I was at Xilinx, we were looking at what was happening in computing. And myself and my business partner, a guy by the name of Dave Bennett, who I've worked with for a long time, back in the 2006-2007 timeframe, we recognized that computing from processors was going to slow down, and that the benefits you were going to get from improved clock rate were going to diminish. And so when we were at Xilinx, we had this idea that some alternative technology which would need to be used. And so we tried to get something started back then, but we got sidetracked onto other ventures that we went into. And then finally, back in 2018, we came back to the idea of there needed to be a different development platform to go after computing across multi-threaded processors, across GPUs, and across FPGAs. And so we were able to start CacheQ much later than we originally anticipated, but that's kind of the journey in terms of how we got here.
Yeah, but you know, some people say timing is everything, and I think this is the right timing right now. So let's look at the industry first. What trends are you seeing in the semiconductor market today?
Well, certainly the large focus of what people are trying to address is machine learning. And in the history that I've been in the business, I've never seen this level of development activity across so many different fronts. I mean, you see improvements in core semiconductor technology in terms of being able to run, develop training platforms, inference platforms. So you've got custom chips being developed, you have advances in GPUs, you have advances in processors. And at the same time, I think there's a recognition now that there also is the requirement to have a comprehensive development platform on top of those so that you can actually develop models. And so with this, you're seeing advancements in models, and then you're seeing advancements in the actual frameworks to actually develop solutions. And so you're just seeing this rapid technology advancement across many, many different fronts, fueled by, at the core technology, semiconductors. But what's interesting is that, you know, people are starting to understand large language models and what's being developed. They're starting to understand potentially how to use those. But it seems there's a varying degrees of adoption in the market now. You certainly have companies who are aggressively adopting this technology, deploying this technology. But what we also see is that there's a number of companies out there that are just trying to figure out how they can integrate it into their own technology or how they can adopt it into their own technology. So you have some, certainly some early adopters, and you have some people who are very aggressive with the technology, But at the same time, you have some people that are still just trying to figure out how they can adopt all this stuff that's so quickly changing.
Right. So can you talk a little bit more about how system design has been impacted by ML?
So if I look at our experience, so we use ML as certainly as an education tool. It allows you to investigate things much more rapidly than you could in the past. We also use it to do code analysis and in some degree, some rudimentary code generation. So I think people are using it in that way. But I think also that there's certain elements that are still at its infancy when it comes to, you know, system design. I think the tool developers are still looking at the technology and figuring out how they can effectively integrate it into their own platforms. And we'll start to see that, you know, some advancements of that coming out. It won't be readily obvious because it's probably buried within their core algorithms. And then if you extend that out even further and you look at system level design, which is edge computing combined with servers in a heterogeneous environment, I think that's still an investigative area that needs a lot more development. You see some technology available there. Certainly NVIDIA has done some stuff combining their edge technology with their server technology, but the rest of the industry is still working on basic technology to enable, you know, that those sort of solutions to be developed.
Right. You know, you mentioned NVIDIA. I mean, today NVIDIA dominates the market, you know, which impacts the opportunities to grow ML applications. I mean, how do you see this changing?
So that's actually a really good question. And I think we have to look at the history, a little bit of the history of NVIDIA and why they are in such dominant position. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Dave Bennett and I, when we started CacheQ, we looked at this technology back in 2006, 2007. Well, that's actually when NVIDIA introduced CUDA into the marketplace. And for years and years and years, they pushed CUDA originally as a development platform for high-performance computing and the ability to use their GPUs for high-performance computing. And then they recognized that it could also be used for training on machine learning. And so NVIDIA, a long time ago, before anyone else, started investing significantly both in the development tools and then also making advances in their GPUs specifically tied to their software. And so if you actually listen to NVIDIA or look at their technology, they certainly have very, very advanced, very, very sophisticated semiconductor technology with their GPUs and their interconnect technology. But I think the reason for their dominant position is actually their development platform. And there's, if you listen to them, I think there's roughly 5 million developers that use CUDA today. And so the ability to actually come up with alternative solutions that'll be adopted in the market is going to be a big, big challenge because of this huge investment that NVIDIA has made in CUDA and the surrounding ecosystem around CUDA. And so what has to happen is there actually needs to be an alternative to CUDA that is brought into the market. And at this point, you know, the industry hasn't done that. So you have to have a development platform where you can readily use NVIDIA technology, but at the same time, it doesn't take a huge investment to actually leverage, for example, other GPUs from, for example, from AMD or alternative technologies from like AWS or Google. And the industry hasn't done that yet. And so that's going to be a lot of work. But as you said, I think it's important that there are alternatives to NVIDIA out there. So you're going to have a development platform that supports alternatives, and then you're going to have a complementary environment that enables people to readily access those alternative technologies to either run training or inference. And it's important, but it's going to take a while for the industry to actually develop those sorts of technology and get adoption. And so in the meantime, NVIDIA is going to continue to be a dominant force in the industry.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's all about the ecosystem, right? And I grew up with NVIDIA, you know, because I'm from the Bay Area. And I told people early on that, listen, you know, the software ecosystem is important. And it's the same thing with the foundries. The ecosystem surrounding TSMC is critical. You know, it's just hard to compete against a huge ecosystem like that. And I was at the GTX conference this year. I go every year, and this year was just incredible. It really was all about the ecosystem, you know, but, you know, there's a lot of flash. Jensen is a very flashy guy, but if you break it down, it's the ecosystem. And I don't know how we're going to replicate that, but you're right. We certainly have to.
Yeah, it absolutely true. It is all about the ecosystem. And if you actually look at their announcements, I mean, they come out with new hardware. And sometimes it's actually hard to figure out exactly what's in there, because you don't necessarily need to know that, because the ecosystem and all the tools that allow you to take advantage of their core technology. And so people can write CUDA code and take advantage of GPUs. And it's actually, as Jensen says, it's a virtuous cycle. So there's lots of NVIDIA hardware out there. So people develop for it. As people develop for it, more hardware gets out there. You get more platform players who introduce platforms in which you can run it on. And so it's a positive feedback loop in terms of more and more adoption. And that's going to be a challenge to counter.
Right. So where are the biggest opportunities to leverage AI and ML? And what are the biggest challenges?
Well, so I think, you know, large language models came out and I think people went, wow. And so I think the largest opportunities are how you actually leverage large language models. And that's either an environment for, you know, enterprise software, how you can leverage that in, you know, manufacturing, retail. So you can grow across almost any sector out there and you can say, okay, within my business, how can I leverage not, you know, object recognition, which is important, but the power of large language models. And so I think that's what the biggest opportunity is. Now, the biggest challenge to that is resources. As we talked about earlier, the market is changing very, very rapidly. You have changes in, you know, semiconductors, you have changes in the development platform, you have more and more models being introduced. Which model do I use? Do I use a vendor-specific model? Do I use an open source model? And so any enterprise that's looking to adopt or leverage these kind of technologies has to have sophisticated resources to do that. And more people are trying to figure out what to do, which means these resources are going to become more and more challenging to actually get. Recently, you know, Dan, we're in the Bay Area. I just saw something with Intuit, and Intuit did it was laying off some people, which is never a good thing. But at the same time, what they're doing is they're hiring a bunch of people to drive their ML strategy. So they're going to have to go out and hire a bunch of people to do that. Well, I think that's representative of businesses out there, in that you have the core people who are developing the technology, but then you have these people who are going to try to adopt it. And you have to have a certain skill set to do that. And that skill set's in limited supply. So I think the challenge is going to be being able to deploy these things with limited resources, and how do you build, you know, that infrastructure around talent to actually deploy things into the market.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. You know, I go to conferences all the time, and the last few were just dominated by AI and ML, and they were also dominated by students, I mean, academia. So I have high hopes for the future, but you're right. We'll probably have a little bit of a gap right now.
Yeah, definitely.
So how do customers engage with CacheQ?
Well, the best way to learn about it is you go to our website at cacheq.net. And there's a bunch of information on the company. At the same time, we generally, our businesses, we do some very, very sophisticated work for a focused set of customers. So the other way to learn about us and get contact to us is you can just send me an email, and that's clay@cacheq.net, and I'll respond to people who contact us directly also.
Great. I love being with a small company. You know, I've done a lot of startups. It was so refreshing. You just
go
right to the technologist.
Exactly.
All right, Clay. Hey, thank you for your time. It'd be nice to catch up with you early next year and see how it's going.
Yeah, love to do it. That'd be great.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.